second period. Smith with a stick lift to get away from Opozo. Eakin make that. Carlson can't get it out. Scores! Kyle Opozo with a dart. Ties the game at one. Michael will spin it back to the line. Gets a return pass. Takes a look. Down low. Here's a chance. And fires! Faceoff won by Vegas. Theodore at the point. He'll walk the line. Played off to the right hand side. Scores! Did not waste any time. Smith with that shot gets his third power play goal of the season. This game is tied. Miller trying to clear. Good support there. And Eichel now with a 2-on-1 developing here. Eichel with Gergensen's in over the line. Eichel walks in. Sabres the lead, 3-2.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan McKinnell on 920 The Game.
Where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. Just when I'd stopped opening doors, finally knowing that I wanted was yours, making my entrance again with my usual flair.
Oh, Vegas! In come the clowns. In come the clowns. Welcome in. I was talking about us. I'm Ryan McKinnell. That's Chris Magnum Chapman. In come the clowns. Clearly, we're talking about the Mac Attack here on this fine Wednesday. Boy, oh boy. I had a full list of things we were going to talk about, including the firing of Alex Cora, Drew Pearson's stub from the Hall of Fame. There are so many things we could have gotten to. And then, Magnum, about 4 hours ago, 5 hours ago, the hammer dropped on Vegas Born Nation, hashtag Vegas Born. Coach Gerard Gallant, if you have not heard, if you are just tuning in, if you are just a loyal listener, and you love hearing the sound of my voice, and you, for some reason, have not been following the sports news of the day. My goodness. Gerard Gallant out. Out as coach of the Vegas Golden Knights. So throw out the rundown. Throw out what we were going to talk about, because this is massive news in the Valley. To talk about it coming up in about a half an hour, we're going to step outside the Valley and be joined by Greg Wyshynski, Puck Daddy, lead hockey writer over there at ESPN. He's got a great story out right now, kind of recapping his thoughts on today's news. And you know what? If you don't want to read it, that's good, because we're going to have Greg on anyway. We're going to ask him about it. We're going to get his thoughts straight from the horse's mouth, if you will. This is shocking. No matter if you agree with it, and if you disagree with it, and it sounds like a lot of you are disagreeing with it, Jesse Granger, lead writer over there at The Athletic for the Vegas Golden Knights, he sent out a poll a little while ago asking, do you agree with the firing? At last check, it had about 4,000 votes, with 87% chiming in, nope. So what say you, Magnum? You like it?
No. No, I don't. Now, I will preface by saying I do like that the replacement is a guy who I think is a good coach, but I don't like the timing of it. I don't like the decision. And ultimately, I don't think it was a knee-jerk reaction. I feel like this was kind of something that they had been thinking about. Kelly McCrimmon kind of echoed that this morning. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like it's because of the four-game losing streak that they pulled the trigger. I just feel like ultimately the team feels, or the organization feels, that they are underachieving as a team. You cannot get rid of every guy on the team.
Right.
So very similar to what happened to Pete DeBoer in San Jose, right? He took a team to the Western Conference Finals last year. The team stumbled out of the gate. They had a pretty good record in November, and then they slumped again, and that was the end of him.
Yeah, and you know what? You talk about performance, right? You talk about the Knights underperforming. I think, yeah, when you look at this season, specifically the addition of Mark Stone late in last season, and what this team's top two lines look like, theoretically, this is a pretty good hockey team. But you have an aging Marc-Andre Fleury, that since the passing of his father has certainly not been
what he was prior. Well, and then you have to look at you have to look at seasons one and two as well. Right? That was overperforming. We would agree with that. Season one was the most amazing inaugural season in the history of sports, not just the NHL. That was unbelievable. And it set the bar ridiculously high. So when you say the Knights are underperforming, I do agree. Because we've seen from year one and two that this is a playoff team. And heading into this season, at least according to Vegas, right, they were the favorites to win the Western Conference. So when you are sitting in the last wild card spot, which is where the Knights currently are, coming off a more than disappointing game last night, and a four-game losing streak, you can categorize that as underperforming. But Magnum, I spoke to one source that's close to the Knights that gave me a great comparison, and I can't shake it. Said essentially this is Icarus. This feels like Icarus. Now, that was great to me. Like, I can't shake it because it feels like the truth. You strike pay dirt in years one and two, you get that taste of glory, and you think you're meant for it. You think that it's your destiny. You think that you can do this whenever you want. Maybe you can't, Magnum. Maybe this is the Vegas Golden Knights team. Maybe this is 6, 7, 8 seed. Maybe years one and two were the overperforming. Maybe year one specifically. Maybe year two was more closely aligned with what this team is. I don't know. But clearly the Vegas Golden Knights front office feels like they do.
Well, I don't know if I necessarily agree with this is who they are. I think if you look at the team on paper, and here's the other thing. Statistically, this team should be a lot better than they are. Like, you look at their, and I'm not a big analytics guy, but there are other people who are associated with the media here in town who are.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll tell you, the Golden Knights are near the top of the league in terms of Corsi, which is a number that they use to generate, you know, teams that play well in their offensive zone. They should have more goals. What's the term? It's expected goals scored. And the Golden Knights are near the top of the list in expected goals scored. Problem is they're not putting the puck in the net. So I personally believe that this team is underachieving. I feel like last year was probably more with who they were.
Yeah.
First year.
First year was so ridiculous.
I mean, you couldn't script it any better.
Right.
Outside of them winning the cup.
Right.
But last year, I feel like, is a little bit more of who they are.
Ups and downs, yes. Swings, yes.
Yes. But
First round exit, potentially.
Should have been a second round opportunity.
No question.
But the reality is there's guys on this roster who have not lived up to their contracts, who have not lived up to expectations.
And you heard that from around the locker room today. It was a whole bunch of personal accountability, of players essentially saying, this is on us. It feels terrible that we let this happen. I will say this, though, and we're going to hear from Riley Smith and Marc-Andre Fleury here in a second. I do wonder, Magnum, how much a quote like a couple days ago, you know the quote I'm talking about? Coach Gerard Gallant after the game, it's not my job to motivate.
Yes, I do remember that.
I'm not a cheerleader. I don't wave the pom-poms. And that left us saying on this very show, Magnum, well, what are you doing and what is your role? What is your job? If it is not a motivator, if it is not someone who is a rah-rah person that tries to get you to win games, what's your purpose here?
Well, he's an X's and O's guy, right? I mean, that's his job, right? Like, players, I'm a big believer in I don't need a coach to get me fired up to play a game. You have a limited opportunity to play in the NHL. There are guys who are on this team last year and the year before who are no longer in the NHL.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. So when you don't take advantage of those opportunities, your jobs go away. Now, there are people who I've seen question some off-the-ice stuff that guys are doing. You know, they're all, you know, a couple guys are involved in a restaurant with Wolfgang Puck, and I've seen people say, hey, you know what, maybe that's a distraction. I don't believe any of that stuff. You have guys on this roster who show up to play every night, and then you have guys on the roster who don't. The guys who don't know who they are, But there are guys like Max Pacioretty who goes out there and he plays hard every single shift.
Mark Stone.
Mark Stone.
Jonathan Marchessault.
Marchessault is that guy.
Yep.
You know, I mean, the William Carrier, a perfect example. He's a guy who's making basically the league minimum.
Yeah.
But you notice him on the ice every single shift.
Guys we're not mentioning, and for good reason, William Karlsson and Nate Schmidt.
I'm, you know, it's funny. Like with William Karlsson, I think a lot like this team in year one.
Yeah.
43 goals is a lot. That's a lot of goals in this
Icarus.
League. But he didn't score nearly as many last year. I think he's on a 13-game goalless streak now. He had his first point in a long time. And, you know, the team needs more from him. They need more from Nate Schmidt. They need more from Alex Tuch.
And there are rumors out there. Don't know how much truth is in them. But potentially, William Karlsson might be on the block.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe that. I think,
you look at what just happened with Gallant.
Well,
I'm just saying, it feels like anything now is possible. And
yes.
Now that could also be a good thing, right?
Yeah, it could be a good motivating factor.
Or it could be the complete opposite. Well, here's what we know. Right now, at this point in the season, 49 games in? This is a massive swing. This goes one of two ways. They either rebound and start playing for new coach Pete DeBoer and do what they need to do to put themselves in a playoff position, and then we'll see what happens. But if they don't, listen, this may not have been a playoff team anyway under Gerard Gallant, right? But if they don't make the playoffs under Pete DeBoer, or if they fall behind in this road trip, it gets real nasty. Which,
yeah.
If you look at last night, that was horrible.
Well,
right?
I think the team knew exactly what they were doing. I don't feel like this decision was made last night. It may have been made after the Columbus game.
Well...
And the reality is, I am not a believer in you take a coach on the road with you and then you fire him. Like, I'm just not a believer in that. But because I saw it happen with one of my teams. I'm a New York Mets fan, and I remember maybe 2007, 2008, Willie Randolph was a manager of the Mets. They went on a road trip to the West Coast. I was at the game in Anaheim. They won the game. They fired him that night at like 1 a.m. in Anaheim after the team made a trip all the way from New York to the West Coast. The team did not recover. They were blown out the following night against Anaheim, which I made a lot of money on because I had a feeling the team was going to play like crap.
I love how you remember that 12 years ago.
Yes. Well, I mean, it was significant because as a Mets fan, you remember those things.
Sure.
When you're a fan of a team, you remember those things. Fans of the
Golden Knights will definitely remember this.
And if this team does not rebound,
it's bad.
And they miss, let's run through this hypothetically.
And this is a very real hypothetical, by the way.
They don't rebound.
Right.
They miss the playoffs. Something else we haven't talked about. Oh, what letter did season ticket holders get yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
We are raising your prices again.
Again, third year in a row.
Oh, and what's the third? Strike here in this hypothetical. Who's coming to town to start playing next September?
An NFL team.
Yes. So you will be relegated to the back page of the sports section, whether you like it or not. Fans may not want to accept that reality. When
the Raiders get here, there is no question.
Will be the dominating franchise in this city.
Yep. And it was going to be that anyway, whether you made the playoffs or not. Now you're making it a whole lot harder on yourself.
If you don't make the playoffs, combined with the Raiders, the season ticket increase.
And what built you? What really made this stronghold for hashtag Vegas Born? It was the grassroots movement. It was the ticket drive to get people
People were donating their money before they even knew we had a team coming here.
Exactly. Before I ever got on local radio here, for those of you that don't know, I started on satellite 7 years ago. I got my own local show here in Vegas. You're listening to it on the Mac Attack a year ago. Started with Cofield the year before that. But prior to all that, I was a hockey fan. I just wanted hockey here.
Yeah.
Then hockey came here. We went through year one. That was incredible. Viewing that from my seats every night walking away. Like, is this real? Just as a sports fan. I'm not talking about Vegas. I don't care about Vegas. I mean, I do.
Yeah.
But you get what I'm saying? To watch that type of story play out. And we were all bonded from that. Vegas was bonded from that. Now, I'm not being a fan here. I'm just saying. It's a grassroots movement, right? You feel a part of the team. You feel the love. You feel interwoven into the fabric and the culture of the Vegas Golden Knights. And then more fees.
Yep.
And then Well, I mean, the Stanley Cup, I think beer went from $14 to $16 to $17 to almost $18. Each round, the beer increased.
Well,
each round.
The price of parking
each
increased?
Round, yes, correct. Each round, the ticket, the prices of tickets, parking.
And now they're already, did I read that they're already charging people for upkeep of the arena? The
yes.
arena's 3 years old.
It was $250 for next year.
So this has the potential, and we didn't even talk about the fact that the fans are already pushing back on the Pete DeBoer hire.
Oh, no question.
Because clearly,
it's Pete DeBoer. I mean, he's
clearly
he's
they
the
don't.
Guy.
He's, he is. He until this morning was the enemy.
He's one of public enemy number ones. Like, first of all, the majority of them are all San Jose Sharks. It's Evander Kane. It's Pete DeBoer. Pete DeBoer and Gerard Gallant.
Joe
went,
Thornton. Yes.
Right. Gallant and DeBoer went head to head last year with their back and forth.
Gallant
the media.
Called DeBoer a clown.
DeBoer famously said about the blown Game 7, "Well, I wouldn't let a team give up four goals."
Yep. Yep.
That's the difference between
well, guess
the
what?
Sharks and the
now,
Knights.
Now you get to coach that team that gave
yeah.
up four goals. So.
Yeah, you do. Now, first of all, before we get to Pete DeBoer, because I do want to get to Pete DeBoer, and again, I want to mention Greg Wyshynski from ESPN National.
From the Jersey Shore.
Yes. fellow New Jerseyan. I think that's what it is. I don't know.
Yes, New Jerseyan.
All right. Fellow New Jerseyan, like Magnum over there. He'll be joining us in about 15 minutes. But let's hear from some of the players from today. Got some audio here from Riley Smith and Marc-Andre Fleury. We will start with Fleury because he is, no matter what people say, the face of this franchise. And you know, he's been slumping a little bit lately. So, obviously, this news was a surprise to the Golden Knights. You could see it at Skate Around. People shared some photos and shared a quick couple of videos that kind of highlighted the mood, which was very somber and very quiet, as you can imagine. And the players kind of followed up on that. A very somber Marc-Andre Fleury upon finding out the news of Coach Gerard Gallant's unceremonious firing.
It's a good wake-up call, you know, I think for all of us. Obviously, it's easier to change two coaches than to change 15 guys, you know, so I think we need to hear the message loud and clear and turn things around and be better.
Maybe you hear the message and you turn things around, or maybe this is a disheartening, crippling move that doesn't get people scared. It just makes them sad. Now, we're talking about professionals, so I'd like to think that this is just a bump in the road. Players play for more than just a coach. But this whole team is more than just a team.
Well,
at least it was, Magnum. And this whole coach was more than just a coach. This was a great story for 2.5 years. Even I don't even care about the 4-game losing streak. Still a great story. You're still 3 points out of first. You're still a winning hockey team with having players that want to come here in a culture that is growing. And now there's a shift. You mentioned the ticket price increase. That was the third year in a row. Year one, okay, fine. We understand it. You're coming off a Stanley Cup. Year two. Or I should say year two, you're coming off a Stanley Cup, okay? That makes sense. Year three, you're coming off that exit and in game
seven. An unceremonious
exit. Right, a horrible exit. And even so, you understand, all right, you know, the fervor's there. It was a Stanley Cup just 1 year ago. All right, but year three, you're raising them again? For what reason? For what justification do you have to raise ticket prices? It's certainly not demand, and you may say it is, but you're going to find out real soon. If this team doesn't make the playoffs, I'm telling you this right now. You're going to see a completely different T-Mobile Arena. Fan base isn't as passionate as they would like you to believe. I'm at nearly every game. All right? It's just not. It's hockey. And that goes back to what you said about the Raiders. This is a hockey town, yes. And the Knights are very special. They are very special. But a lot of these fans that are fans of the Vegas Golden Knights are not hockey fans.
No, they are Golden Knights fans.
Correct. And that is a very different relationship, unlike almost every other team in the NHL. And I think that has to be accounted for. It really does. So,
well, you run the risk. You are running a serious risk if you are Kelly McCrimmon, because we know that Bill Foley is a businessman.
Right.
He wants to win.
That much is clear.
If you are Kelly McCrimmon and you make this decision to fire a very popular coach, the first coach in team history, a guy who led you to the Stanley Cup Finals, won the Jack Adams Award for Coach of the Year,
is an all-star in the year you fired him.
A week before you fire him, he will be coaching. I don't know if he's going to coach.
No
I
way.
Feel like that's
right.
Could be very awkward.
That can't happen.
But
Is that going to happen?
I don't know. I haven't seen anything.
I haven't seen anything
to tell me that it's not. Maybe Greg Wyshynski will know a little bit better than me, but I haven't seen anything to indicate that he's not going to. But you run the risk of having a revolt amongst your most passionate fans.
I think it's already started.
If this doesn't. Yeah. No, I don't think so. I think people are angry, but I think people will get over it if DeBoer comes in and wins.
Okay.
If he does not come in and win, and this team continues along the current trajectory of win 3 or 4 in a row, lose 4 or 5, or lose 6 of 7 or 6 of 8, this team has a serious problem going into next season. If this team fails to make the playoffs this year, people will look at this date, January 15th, as the date that they killed the Golden Knights.
Mm.
Because I felt like under Gallant, they were still going to make the playoffs.
I agree.
They're just too good.
Yep.
They have too many good players.
And when we saw,
now you run the risk.
We also saw that slump last year where it was through February into the beginning of March where they went 3-9-1.
Until they got Mark Stone. They made the trade for Mark Stone.
And then things turned around.
Yeah.
And they should have beat the Sharks.
Yeah. But you bring in a coach who's unpopular. I don't know how the players are going to react to him because as far as being a coach, he is the polar opposite of Gerard
Gallant. And I do think the players will respond because everything that you hear around this league and everyone who is in the know, Pete DeBoer is an excellent coach.
However,
fans don't know anything.
No. Well, the thing is DeBoer has taken two teams to the Stanley Cup final.
Bad teams.
My New Jersey Devils.
Yep.
I think it was 2012 when they lost to the LA Kings.
Yeah, and then the San Jose Sharks with Martin Jones.
In 2016.
The San Jose Sharks with Martin Jones as their goaltender.
Or maybe it's 2015. 2015, it was the year before Nashville lost, right? So the Sharks lost to the Penguins. Nashville ended up losing the Penguins. Golden Knights come in the following year. So he's only a couple years removed from taking a Martin Jones-led team to the Stanley Cup Finals. That team didn't have Erik Karlsson. I mean, Erik Karlsson is a great player. That team did not have him, and he took that team. They weren't exactly a great team.
They were an aging team back then.
Yes.
And you saw what happened when they lost a couple pieces. The whole
I think losing Joe Pavelski, I think, was the move that really hurt that team because Doug Bilson, their general manager, made the decision that Erik Karlsson was more important than Joe Pavelski. In the long run, he's probably right.
Yeah.
However, in the short term, that did a serious, it was a serious punch in the gut. Well, for that team and that organization.
I like this quote from Mitch Moss. You know, Mitch, he's over there on
my
satellite.
Buddy Mitch. Yep. Yep.
Mitch used to be here at Lotus and hosted all sorts of different shows. You guys know Mitch. He had a great tweet earlier. Said, safe to say that the success of year one spoiled it for everyone in this city, not just the fans. He's talking about the front office expectations, right? Set the bar too high, and now you're too big for your britches. That's essentially what Mitch is saying. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but that's how that reads. And I got to be honest, Magnum, there's that part of me that I it's a huge roll of the dice, and if that ends up being the truth, right, that this is just a pretty above-average hockey team that's overperformed, and you misread the situation and got rid of your heart and soul and the driving force, maybe Gallant was the reason you got to there in year one.
I think the
other thing— all he had to deal with in year one.
Yeah. The other thing is, I don't really think that George McPhee is without criticism here.
No, I don't think
so
either.
You look at some of the moves that George McPhee's made, a lot of them, they haven't exactly panned out. I mean, the Max Pacioretty deal kind of worked out, but you gave up
everything.
An awful lot, not just when you acquired Pacioretty, but when you go back to what they gave up to acquire Tomas Tatar, who they ended up sending to Montreal along with Nick Suzuki, right? They gave up Branstrom at a draft pick. They allowed Nikita Gusev to walk out the door. Gusev's only got 19 points in his last 22 games or something like that.
Who, and for the record, I said Gusev was going to be a good player.
And
the
you
NHL.
Gave up. You got a second and third in return. You have no way of knowing how those picks that you gave up or you got for Nikita Gusev, you have zero way of knowing how those work out for the franchise.
Feels like they're managing scared. Oh, my God, we have a window and we have to win the Stanley Cup.
I think that's exactly
if we don't. And that's ridiculous.
I think they're looking at the window is as long as Marc-Andre Fleury is our goalie, we can win.
Yeah.
When he's not here, we don't have a chance to win. And I think they're finding out right now, maybe that's not the right approach. And this is kind of I don't feel like it was a panic move. I feel like they knew they were going to do this because the timing of it is, there's 3 weeks between today and
do it on the road trip.
So the fans, the anger will die down, and hopefully for Pete DeBoer's sake, he wins a couple games on this road trip. Otherwise, He's walking into a hornet's nest in his own arena.
Yeah, I think you talk about this being in the works for a while. I tend to agree. You heard rumblings last year from different people, and I heard from a couple different sources that there was a rift between potentially McPhee and Gallant about credit, who was the reason for the successes of those first couple of years. In this case, it was just year one because year two had yet to conclude. Ed Graney had a great tweet. And it sticks in line with you saying that this just didn't happen in the last 24 hours. Graney said, quote, "I refuse to believe Gallant lost the locker room. If so, how do they rally from three down against the Blues? This obviously has been brewing in management's eyes for a while, but not because players stopped working for him. If so, they're the world's best actors when talking on him, and they aren't." I think that's fair. I completely agree with Ed on that. There is something more to this story, and it's not conspiratorial. It's just look at the landscape. Finally, before we get to Greg Wyshynski, coming up here in about 5 minutes from ESPN. You see this note from Ron Futrell?
In fact, I retweeted it. Yeah.
This I don't like.
I don't like it either.
Now, I don't know. I haven't talked to Ron.
Ron is
Channel 8, right?
Ron's legit. Ron would never.
No, he wouldn't just make something up.
No, he's not that guy.
So essentially what he said is he was out at City National Arena looking to get fan responses and reactions to the news today.
Yeah.
And he was told by, what, the Vegas Golden Knights?
Whoever is still at T-Mobile Arena, maybe security, I don't know, maybe some upper management.
I thought it was City National.
City National, what did I say, T-Mobile?
T-Mobile, yeah.
Yeah, City National Arena, right?
So Ron was out at City National trying to get fan reactions, and someone from the Vegas Golden Knights told him that he cannot film, and he kicked him out, essentially. Kicked him out of City National.
Which is not a good look if you are the Vegas Golden Knights.
No, it's salty, it's petty, yeah. It's unprofessional, it's ridiculous from the standpoint that you know damn well what the fan reactions are.
Yeah.
Check Jesse Granger's poll, 4,000 votes, 87% said they don't agree with it.
Yeah.
Now, you may be looking for levity, you may be looking for calmness, you may be looking for a more educated, focused sort of response, but that's not what you're going to get. That's not what fans are, and that's not the role of a fan. The fans spend their money, and they want to sound off on it, and the media is there to cover it and document the history.
Well, this goes back to something.
Silencing the media
is not good.
No.
Some people, and I won't name names. That's not what I'm here for, but there are some people within the media locally here who feel that the team tries to control the media narrative. And a lot of members of the media kind of give them exactly what they want.
Yeah, but there's a lot who won't.
Yes.
So that'll
Ron,
be,
and I feel like guys like Ed Graney would.
Adam, Ron, whoever. There are
I mean, for
really
Ron
good
to
reporters.
Tweet that out, that's his way of saying, hey, you know what? I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it sounds to me like he's saying, you know what? This is a little ridiculous not allowing us to do our job.
And if they think that the media here is some, like, podunk hillbillies that are just happy to have a pro sports team in Las Vegas.
We're all from somewhere else.
Right. We're all from somewhere else. We all, most of us have a lot of different experiences with media and sports journalism. And listen, you call it as you see it, right? Things were good in the first couple years, even after Game 7 in the playoffs last year, right? This is starting to trend in the opposite direction. And that's why you want unbiased media. That's why I don't call myself a fan. Yes, I'm a season ticket holder, but I will say this till that is not why. I didn't get those season tickets to root on Vegas.
I got season tickets to
support hockey. I'm not kidding you. My total thought was, oh my God, I'm gonna have 41 chances to see the likes of Kucherov, of Crosby,
McDavid,
of Patrick Kane, of Jonathan Toews. To see all of this talent, to have a pro sports team come through Vegas, that was amazing.
Like I had that thought a couple nights ago. I took my fiance to her very first NHL game, and my initial thought was, wow, I am so lucky in that I get to watch Hall of Fame players almost on a nightly basis at T-Mobile Arena. Like, there are guys that my son's been to four games. He's seen the Lightning twice. How many Hall of Famers are on that Lightning team?
Well, three probably right
Hedman,
now. Hedman, Stamkos, and Kucherov.
Yeah,
and then probably two more.
And if Vasilevskiy goes on to have a great career, he's another one.
And if Braden Point stays on the track he's on.
I mean, so that's a team that has five potential Hall of Famers on it.
Yep.
My son's seen them twice.
Yeah, so we're very lucky here in Vegas. But again, we're at a tipping point right now. There's a lot that still is to be figured out. What is Pete DeBoer's role going to be? How is he going to be accepted? What is the view nationally? How is this being perceived across the country? Because I'll tell you what, when you looked across Twitter today, it wasn't just Vegas with their jaws on the floor. CM Punk, WWE wrestler, huge hockey fan, chiming in with a jaw drop emoji. Everyone and their mother, who is a hockey fan, was stunned by this news of Gerard Gallant being out with the Vegas Golden Knights. So to talk about it from the national perspective, coming up next, you're on the Mac Attack.
The Mac Attack returns.
Well, normally in this spot, I'd love to talk to this guy about some All Elite Wrestling or how excited we are for Bad Boys to be dropping in a couple of days. But, well, we have much more pressing issues to talk about. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, one of the true great hockey minds in this sport. Greg, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, I mean, listen, I mean, Bash at the Beach coming up tonight. So it's very exciting on an AEW. And plus AEW inked a deal to be on TNT through 2023. So that's good news for those of us who'd like to see this competition stick around for a little bit.
Well, it's definitely you and I. Now, let's keep talking pro wrestling and see how much longer I have a show on the day Gerard Gallant got fired. Actually, let's pivot that. We are excited for the release of Bad Boys, yes? I got my tickets for tomorrow. You are going, I hope?
I mean, I don't know if I'm going. I'm a little bit bummed that it's not a Michael Bay joint.
Yeah,
but I am seeing that the reviews are quite good, and I didn't think I'd see a day where the Rotten Tomatoes score for Bad Boys 3 would be exponentially higher than it was for the last Star Wars movie, but here we are.
That is true. That is the reality we're living in. All right, speaking of reviews, Greg Wyshynski, what is the national perspective? What is the review? What are the thoughts that you're getting on this Gerard Gallant firing? I mean, obviously in Vegas, where our jaws are on the floor, I get the feeling that it's that way across the country. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, no one at all anticipated this happening the way it did. You know, it's two schools of thought. The first, I gave the move a B+. The first school of thought is that the Golden Knights' underlying numbers are really, really good in a way that maybe shouldn't have you thinking the coach should get fired. I mean, you know, from a expected goals percentage, as far as the shot quality they're getting and what should be happening with the puck going in the net but isn't, their possession metrics are great. There's a lot of things to really like about this team, and you could make the argument that, much like with Peter Laviolette in Nashville, it's just a matter of some bad puck luck and some underwhelming defensive play and goaltending that sort of subverted the season so far for Gallant. Now, the other part of the equation, though, and the part that I like, is who they hired. I'm a big Peter DeBoer fan. There is absolutely no questioning his resume. When he goes places, he finds immediate success. The Florida Panthers were a 93-point team in its first season in the NHL. The New Jersey Devils and the San Jose Sharks both went to the Stanley Cup final in his first season with those teams. He's a guy who connects with players. The style of his coaching, I think, fits really well with what the Knights have tried to do in the past, which is come at you in waves. His defensive coaching gets kind of a bad rap because the Sharks were a mess this season.
Right.
But from a shot suppression standpoint, his team's been better than Gallant's teams. If it weren't for the guy they were hiring, I would say this is a bad sort of knee-jerk move. But if the premise and the thesis from Kelly McCrimmon and the Knights is there's more to get out of this team than the guy that's been here for 3 years is getting, then bringing in Pete DeBoer might be the best option to do that.
Greg, I had one insider describe the Golden Knights organization like Icarus. And I really like that from the standpoint, you know, year one was an anomaly. Greatest inaugural season in the history of sports, not just the NHL. Year two, I mean, obviously there's an unceremonious exit, but you find yourself in the playoffs. When you hear that comparison to Icarus, listen, I like Pete DeBoer too. You know, take away the clown stuff and the way Vegas feels about him and the playoff run last year. You set it up perfectly. This is an accomplished coach, beloved by the players. He has the track record. He has the resume. He turned around the Florida Panthers. But I think a lot of those same things can be said about Gerard Gallant, right? So is this somewhat of, when you hear that Icarus comparison, do you think there is, you know, any legs in that from the standpoint that, Leo, listen, the Golden Knights have just overperformed and their expectations right now are just way too high for a team that's only in its third season?
No, I think the expectations are where they should be. I mean, okay, this is an extraordinarily talented team. And you know, no one could predict some of the declines that have happened this year with Fleury playing the way that he has. Nate Schmidt's had his struggles. I mean, there are certain guys that aren't hitting their offensive marks like they did in prior years. But, I mean, where the comparison fits is when you look at the standings. You know, the first season was what it was. The second season, there was a bit of a downgrade in the standings, and injuries played a role in that. But for three straight seasons, the points percentage for this team in the standings has declined. Now, what hasn't really been discussed here is the interesting thing about Kelly McCrimmon. And I've talked to a few people around the Knights today that all said the same thing, which is that even if Bill Foley was the one saying, you know, pull the trigger on this, it's got to be McCrimmon who makes the call. He's not taking this job as general manager to just simply be a parrot for the owner. I mean, he's the one driving the bus on this call, right? So what's interesting about McCrimmon, unlike other GMs in this league, he was an accomplished coach in the WHL in junior hockey, and was for a very long time. So a lot of GMs in this league don't have that kind of experience behind the bench. McCrimmon does. And so when you hear him talk about getting more out of this team than the coach is, when you hear him talk about the Knights not meeting expectations, some of that is obviously from the perspective of a guy who helped put together this roster, but some of it's from an old, crusty old coach who looks at this team and says, I think that a different voice can get more out of these guys, because if it was me behind the bench, I bet they'd be playing better.
Here with Greg Wyshynski from ESPN. Greg, listen, I think you make some good points. I am curious, as we talk about this shocking news of Gerard Gallant being fired, the Vegas Golden Knights are coming out and saying, hey, you know, this was essentially, it came together within the last, you know, couple of days. It wasn't something that we were planning. A lot of us in Vegas, Greg, we don't necessarily believe that. This feels like something that was in the works. We had actually heard rumors last year that potentially when George McPhee had his finger on the pulse, that maybe he was, when Joel Quenneville got let go for the Blackhawks, I heard a couple of different reports that potentially the Knights would be looking at Coach Q. Obviously, that didn't work out. But I'm having a hard time believing, Greg, that this just came out of nowhere. What do you think?
I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. Did it come out of nowhere? Of course not. I mean, I don't necessarily buy the line, and this goes for any team, mm-hmm. where, like, the first time they talk to a coach was 24 hours before they decide to fire the guy that they got. You know, things don't happen that way. You know, at least a feeler had to be put out at some point in the last month to figure out if DeVore would even be, you know, interested in this before you even make a move on a guy who's been a winning coach for you.
Right.
That said, just because you put the feeler out, just because you test the waters, it's no different than a trade. Just because you're testing the waters on something doesn't mean you're necessarily going to pull the trigger on something. So I don't think that it was predestined that this was going to happen, say, a month ago. I mean, the reports are that earlier this season they were talking about a potential extension with Gerard Gallant, right? So
right.
Did they make first contact? Did they figure out who was out there, who might be interested? Of course they did, because you are not firing a coach who has led his team to the playoffs twice and had them tied in points for the last wild card spot, only 3 points out of first place in this division, unless you believe you have a better alternative waiting in the wings.
Do you think the Knights hire someone if Pete DeBoer isn't on the available list? Do you think this change happens no matter what?
I saw Kelly McCrimmon ask that today, and he, you know, kind of answered with the "we don't deal in hypothetical" thing that you would expect a general manager to answer with.
Right.
I don't know if it's as simple as it's either Pete DeBoer or bust. There are other candidates out there. I mean, you know, we already saw John Hines get hired by Nashville. It's not out of the question, as we saw with DeBoer, that a guy who gets fired in season all of a sudden winds up with another team. If it was Peter Laviolette, would this happen? Potentially. I mean, that guy's got the same kind of incredible resume as DeBoer has in some ways. So I don't know if it's DeBoer or bust. It wouldn't shock me if it was. I think he definitely earned the respect of management, you know, in competing against him for the last two seasons. But I think that the bottom line is that they're not firing Gerard Gallant and then elevating, you know, an assistant coach. Gallant's great. And unless you have a better alternative to him, then there's no point in making this move.
What do you think happens next for Gallant?
I wrote about that today on ESPN. You know, I think there's three interesting options. The first is the most immediate one, which is Does he petition the league to go to the All-Star game? Probably not.
Maybe if the All-Star game was in Tampa or Los Angeles or something
he does, but it's St. Louis, so I'm sure it'll either be Rick Tocchet or Travis Green taking over.
Yeah.
But as far as next job goes, I mean, the immediate thought everybody had was this guy played for a long time with the Detroit Red Wings. He played with Steve Yzerman, the current general manager in Detroit. Jeff Blashill, it's expected, will be out of a job come at the end of the season because he was not Yzerman's hire. And that would be a natural fit for him to go back to Detroit and work with a young team and try to instill a winning legacy there again. But the other alternative, and that's a really interesting one, is Seattle. It's been expected that Ron Francis, GM there, is going to end up hiring somebody he's worked with during his days in Carolina, whether that's Laviolette, whether that's Paul Maurice leaving the Winnipeg Jets and going to Seattle. But if you're the Seattle franchise, I mean, it's due diligence to kick the tires on Gerard Gallant, kick the tires on a guy that went through this very process in 2017 with unprecedented success, not only in helping to build the team, but in also coaching it. And, you know, there are other factors involved, but leading into a Stanley Cup final. So, you know, it's we often talk about coaches and experiences and you want the right man for the job. Well, there's nobody more experienced in the NHL than Gerard Gallant at taking an expansion team and making it into something in short order.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so the other side of that, the new coach, Pete DeBoer, landing here in Vegas. You know, I understand fans may feel a certain way out here in Vegas, but the fact remains, and you hit on it a little bit, Greg, that the Vegas Golden Knights are getting an accomplished, well-respected, and a really, really good head coach. So what can Vegas expect out of old Pete DeBoer?
Well, like I wrote about today, like this is akin to the Justice League hiring Lex Luthor as their coach. Like it's got to be such an awkward feeling for a fan base that in short order has been trained to hate this guy,
yeah,
and to hate his team, his former team, to now all of a sudden have be the head coach. But look, I'm a DeBoer fan. Like I said, if it wasn't for him getting the call to replace Gallant, I'd find this move to be a little bit crazy. But he's a real good coach. And you know, if you look at the Sharks and what happened this year, it's a product of the degradation of talent on that roster and everybody getting a little bit older. What's really impressed me over the years about DeBoer, not only with some of his systems and from a tactical standpoint, where I think he's quite good, his relationship with the players is wonderful. I mean, like, he's the first guy to go into San Jose after Todd McClellan got fired there and be like, you know what these guys need? A break. and not schedule practices every day and treat the veteran players with a little bit of a soft glove to give them some leeway and not overwork them during the regular season. And as a result, the team went to the Cup final in his first season and, you know, went back to the conference final last year. So he's a real good coach. And I know that you look at the fact that he's bounced around a few places and have questions about that. But taking over a team that definitely has its share of veterans is going to be a fascinating thing to watch. And like I said, from a system standpoint, I think what he does kind of fits in with the Knights are already doing. And it'll be interesting to see if he can, you know, get some of the guys that haven't played up to standards playing up the standards.
All right, so what do you expect is going to happen, Greg? Does this Vegas Golden Knights team, do they win the Pacific? Do they make the playoffs? I mean, what does the future hold for the Vegas Golden Knights?
I hope that they make the playoffs from a purely selfish standpoint. I do like going to Vegas. But no, I think when you look at the Pacific Division and you see how these teams are bunched up, as has been pointed out by a lot of people, there are certain trends that have happened with this team that you have to imagine are going to be bucked at some point. You know, the shooting percentage is going to get better. The PDO, which measures shooting percentage and save percentage, will get better. There's a certain amount of like snapback to a lot of the underlying numbers for the Knights this season that could easily happen under DeBoer and could have easily happened under Gallant as well. I think they'll be fine. I also think that now the attention turns to management, and rightfully so, because you know, one of the things that definitely happened for Gallant and to his detriment was the inability of this team to address its problems on the blue line. And the fact of the matter is that once you get past Shea Theodore and once you get past Nate Schmidt, there isn't a defenseman on this team that has more than 10 points, and you cannot win in the NHL if that's the case. So while they probably can't go get that franchise-level D-man that the team needs, I think, to really compete for a Stanley Cup at the trade deadline, they can at least find somebody that's going to be able to provide a little bit more of a puck-moving element and hopefully some offensive pop on that blue line, because right now that is a huge Achilles heel for this team.
Yeah, great stuff, Greg, from you. We really appreciate it. I know it's a busy day. I know you got a lot of requests. You got a lot of work that you're putting in. And, again, we really appreciate you giving us a few minutes here in Vegas.
Hey, don't worry. Thanks for having me.
All right. That is Greg Wyshynski, Puck Daddy. You can find him out on Twitter, at Wyshynski. And you should also check out his Puck Soup podcast that he's got over there on ESPN. Great insight throughout the season from the one and only Greg Wyshynski. Again, really appreciate him giving us a few minutes here to give us that national perspective. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Luke Kuechly retires from the NFL at 28. So shocking. Not really.
You're listening to The Mac Attack.
All right, we are back. Thanks to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN for stopping by. If you missed any part of that conversation, reacting to today's shocking news, the Vegas Golden Knights relieving coach Gerard Gallant of his duties and instead hiring former San Jose Shark coach Pete DeBoer. You can catch that on LVSportsNetwork.com after the show. Final note on today's show, which we would have spent a lot more time on had this news not come down. Last night, a bit of shocking news in the NFL, depending on what side of the fence you sit on. Luke Kuechly, star linebacker of the Carolina Panthers, retiring. A very emotional Twitter video, because that's where we're at right now. At age just 28, and people in the league, you know, myself, I was a little bit shocked. I was a little bit shocked, and then I remembered. Well, just a few months ago, beginning of September, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL retired because he didn't want to do the grind anymore. He didn't want to take the hits. He didn't want to power through the injuries. Too much. I didn't blame him. That was Andrew Luck. He retired at the age of 29. Rob Gronkowski, same age. 29 years old when he walked away after winning the Super Bowl last year. Patrick Willis, former 49er, one of the all-time greats, really, when his time was there. Age 30 when he walked away. Calvin Johnson, age 30 when he walked away. If you were shocked, and as I admitted, I was a little bit last night, until I started thinking about the landscape and really thinking about what the ages we're living in. And that part is very clear. We are living in a new age. This is a different NFL. Yes, you have Tom Brady playing until he's 65 and getting his AARP benefits. And yeah, fine. That's an anomaly. Drew Brees, too. What we're looking at, this right here, Luke Kuechly at 28, that's the future. Get used to it. You will not. At some point, there will be a time when you will no longer be shocked by these retirements because players are smarter than ever. They realize more than ever what's on the line. How much the NFL does not care about them. Their employer does not care about them. If you think so, if you think the NFL actually cares about their players, you're an idiot. I'm talking to the players. Luke Kuechly, you are not an idiot. You grab that bag and you run, sir. Tip of the cap to you. And I say, sir, even though he is 8 years my junior, he's going to make more money in his 6 years in the league or whatever the hell it was that I'll make in my entire life. That's precisely why he walked away. Get the bag, sacrifice your teens and your 20s, roll the dice on your future and your brain and your health. All that. Right? And then get out while you still got... Get out while the getting's good. So props to you, Luke Kuechly. But again, this is the new normal. The NFL is changing. Get used to it. We'll be back tomorrow. See you on the Mac Attack in 24 hours, friends.